Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is Bailey against the Federal Reserve Bank. Ms. Bogart.
May it please the court. Ms. Bailey and Ms. Smith are here to ask that this court return this case to the district court for a trial on the merits on their race discrimination claims and on Ms. Bailey's age and sex discrimination claims. As the brief of the appellants makes clear, the district court, when it excluded the relevant statistical evidence of Skoog, evidencing that race accounted for a statistically and economically significant percentage of difference in grade advancements between whites and blacks over the study period, which was February of 1996 through 2000. The district court erroneously excluded the analyses on a finding that Skoog had failed to take into account relevant variables for purposes of this analysis.
But Ms. Bogart, whatever may have been the value of Dr. Skoog's studies back when this was a class action or when there was some general issue, I just don't see what your theory of relevance is. Just let me give you a hypothetical. Certainly I'm not speaking about your clients, but suppose the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago had terrible general practices of discriminating against African Americans. But suppose Susie Smith had a long criminal record, and so they don't promote her, even though, or they don't hire her, whatever you want, even though she's African American. Well, she's African American, but the reason in that individual case is the long criminal record. It's not anything to do with race. And so I don't know how, in your view, this general evidence, whatever its merit may be from Dr. Skoog, carries over to the individual case.
The composition of the workforce that Dr. Skoog analyzed.
Why does it tell us about this individual?
They
have different qualifications, different backgrounds. You see, just because in general there's a problem doesn't tell you about N of one.
This court addressed that question of the appropriate labor pool in Adams versus Ameritech. Your Honor discussed the question of what is the relevant labor pool for purposes of a statistical analysis in an employment discrimination case.
Counsel, that's not the question being asked. The question is not the right comparison, but why statistics are helpful about particular cases. Let's suppose that statistics tell you, to a reasonable degree of statistical certainty, that 3 out of every 10 black employees of the Federal Reserve have been discriminated against. How does that help an individual plaintiff?
The statistics make a fact more probably true than less true, or go at least to that determination. Ultimately, before the district court, in any trier of fact, the question is it more probably true or less true that race accounted for the individual instances of discrimination that both Bailey and Smith have identified over, in fact, the time period that was the subject of this statistical analysis? They aren't identifying a single instance of a denial of a promotion or a single instance of a denial of a pay increase. They're identifying, each of them, multiple instances of a denial of a promotion over the very same study period that was the subject of Dr. Skoog's analysis. When a trier of fact asks the question, if the FRB comes forward and tries to explain as to each of those individual instances that they have identified, there was some explanation. As we have noted, they have done already. One of the facts that the jury would have before it is, one, is that true? And two, if it isn't true, does this statistical analysis, which demonstrated that from a HR department that had a hand in every promotion that occurred during this study period, is it more probably true than not that race accounted for the failure to promote Bailey? that it accounted for the failure to promote Smith.
Well, of course, in Judge Easterbrook's hypothetical, the answer is no. It's not more probably true than not, because only 3 out of 10 are the victims, statistically speaking, of a race-based decision.
But in this instance, we have in this pool of people, and I think that that does become relevant based on Your Honor's hypothetical, the pool of people analyzed by Skoog included not only Smith and Bailey, but the comparators that they have identified as to each of the instances of individual discrimination, individual treatment discrimination that were in the pool.
But there you're mixing completely two different kinds of proof. One is appropriate for a disparate treatment case, namely, were people of different races who were otherwise similarly situated treated differently? Was a Caucasian or somebody else given a promotion who had seemingly the same background? The other is these statistics, which I just have to say, I just don't see how they help the individual case when the thing that's going to trump in an individual case are that individual's qualifications.
This case and this court has recognized that there are instances, and this is one of them, where there are pattern and practice allegations, in this case specifically focused on the promotion practices.
Let me ask the question in a different way. What damages are you seeking?
The damages that Bailey and Smith seek in a employment case are both financial as well as equitable.
No. What concretely? The reason I'm asking this is because one could imagine a parallel to tort litigation. Suppose your client had taken a drug which increased by 10% her chance of a heart attack, but you can't tell which particular people who get a heart attack got it because of a drug and which got it for some other reason. And in that case, the damages may be approximated at 10% of the decrease in longevity attributable to heart attacks. Now, one could imagine a claim, if you've got statistics showing that there's, say, a 10% headwind for African Americans at the Federal Reserve, a claim for statistic for basically actuarial damages. Is that the claim you're making?
Not actuarial.
10% of the value of a promotion, if the study shows that women or blacks suffer 10%, you might seek 10% of the value of a promotion?
In the appendix, which is...
Is that what you're seeking?
I don't believe that that's the nature of the damages calculations that have been prepared but have not been the subject of deposition testimony. The damages calculations have been prepared in conjunction with the individual acts of discrimination. We have selected comparators who've been identified.
That's the problem. If you want to make a statistical showing, seems to me you have to accept statistical damages. That is, the actuarial value of the reduction in your client's chances shown by the study. But if you're not seeking that, if you're seeking everything your client would get from a lost promotion, then you have to make the individual case, not the statistical case.
Well, we are making both cases in this situation, and on the question...
You're making both cases? So you are asking for statistical damages, actuarial damages?
Well, we're making proof that there, based on statistics, that there is evidence of pattern and practice discrimination on the question of whether race was an explanation for the denial of promotions, the denial of pay. We are also making individual treatment cases on specific instances as to Bailey and Smith with comparators who are part of the statistical pool in which we indicate that they were as or more qualified for the positions and promotions that they were denied. And at least in the record, although not yet the subject of the proceedings, there have been damages reports prepared on both sides with respect to the losses incurred in the individual treatment cases. Nobody has raised the question, and it isn't part of the record, as to whether there should be actuarial damages based on a statistical analysis at this juncture.
There isn't any other juncture.
Well, at the district court level, there isn't any issues that have been raised concerning the appropriateness of a actuarial statistical damage assessment for purposes of their individual damages versus an individual treatment comparison and losses associated with individual denials of promotions.
Can I ask you, moving on from statistics, what evidence should I find in the record of Ms. Bailey's particular qualifications for the positions, the specific positions she was seeking?
In each of the specific instances that we've identified for Bailey, as well as for Smith, to the extent that the Federal Reserve Bank produced documents, we have identified their comparative qualifications, their comparative degrees, educational degrees, their performance evaluations, and in most instances for Bailey, for example, she had actually performed positions, performed the duties that became the subject of somebody else's, a white comparator's, promotion and pay increase, where Bailey did not receive that promotion or pay increase while performing the duties and at a exceeds or meeting expectations circumstance.
You're familiar, I'm sure, with this circuit's law that says there's got to be a fairly dramatic difference in qualifications before we're going to say that an employer chose the wrong person. I mean, we're obviously, as we frequently remind people, not the personnel department. Do you see, where would we find that kind of a difference?
Well, with respect to Bailey, Bailey had achieved not only a bachelor's degree, but a master's degree in business administration. None of those degrees were not only not recorded for her, but taken into account in assessing her skills.
Why does that mean that they chose the wrong, for say they chose Mr. Slawinski, or they chose Zoriana Kurzeja, or the others? I guess I have trouble finding a precise enough lineup of her qualifications, her experience, to meet this circuit's standards in an individual case.
I'm sorry, Judge. I see my white light is on, but let me answer this. In one specific instance we've identified, and I believe there is more than one, Bailey was told she was rejected because her specific educational qualifications weren't sufficient. Her educational qualifications, as for that particular job, were exceeded that of the individual, white individual, who was selected.
Okay.
And
if
I would add that the
pre...
All right.
That's fine.
Thank you, Ms. Eldred. Ms. Stillman.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Nina Stillman. I'm with James Bales, who's sitting at council table. We represent the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. Your Honors, this is a 9-year litigation, and it would be virtually impossible for me to go point by point with Ms. Bogart as to the differences we have throughout this case. So what I'd like to do in the time I have allotted to me is to address, first of all, answer any questions you have, and address the specific issues that plaintiff appellants have brought to this court, which in large part have already been addressed, I think, in the questions that you have directed to Ms. Bogart. And that, of course, is the Skoog report, but what was not addressed, the charts, which are an issue also that was raised by plaintiff's appellants. And then questions on the prima facie case showing, which Your Honor was addressing at the time that Ms. Bogart's time went out. Since charts weren't discussed before, I think maybe it makes sense to start there. In addition to the Skoog reports, which Your Honors have addressed, and if I have time, I certainly will as well, plaintiffs are seeking to overturn the judgment.
Well, you say in your in your brief that statistics from which discriminatory actions might be inferred have no relevance in a discrimination case other than, what, a class action? Is that your position?
Your Honor, I think what we say is they have to be compelling. In a disparate treatment case, statistics have to be, first of all, related, relevant to the individual claims, and
they
have to be
mean?
Compelling. Well, to use the example that we have right here, the Skoog report dealt with bank-wide data.
What's an example of statistics that are relevant to an individual case?
Certainly, Your Honor, I think statistics that relate to, for example, Ms. Smith and Ms. Bailey, and
I don't understand you. They wouldn't have statistics relating to two people, right?
No, and I was going to say, Your Honor, and their comparison to other employees that are similarly situated in the supervision and regulation department.
I don't
department.
Understand what that would have to do with statistics. What is your conception of an individual discrimination case in which statistics about the workforce in general would be relevant? Maybe you don't
think
there
is any. The workforce
in
general would be relevant? I don't think they would be, Your Honor.
They'd never be relevant.
Not the workforce in general.
So statistics are never relevant in an individual discrimination case.
They could be, Your Honor.
For,
well, let's take, using the example of a hire case. If somebody was claiming that they were not hired to a specific job classification, let's say entry-level laborers, and there were statistics that were used as in conjunction with anecdotal
evidence. What statistics?
Evidence, statistics of the hiring rates in a specific time period for that same job. That would be certainly collateral evidence that would be relevant. Yes, Your Honor, in a disparate treatment case.
Well, how would that be different from statistics showing that blacks were never promoted at the Federal Reserve Board, supposing that was what Skoog had found?
Well, Your Honor, supervision and regulation, the department in which these two plaintiffs worked, is itself 250 people at any one time. The bank at any one time has close to 2,000 people. For example, the Skoog reports...
Yeah, and suppose that, it turned out Federal Reserve Bank in its history had never promoted a black person. Now, you're saying that's just irrelevant because this is a case
the inextricable zero, Your Honor? That wasn't the case here.
Well, no kidding. Yeah. You think I don't know it's not the case here?
Yes, Your Honor.
You understand a hypothetical question?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
I just think, Your
so
Honor...
So suppose the Federal Reserve Board had never promoted a black person. Now, are you saying that is inadmissible evidence because it's irrelevant to the situation of these two people? Is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor, in an individual case, unless they could show...
Well, I don't understand that. I mean, suppose the head of the Federal Reserve Board said, I don't like black people. I don't like to promote them. That would be relevant, wouldn't it?
That's direct evidence, Your Honor.
Oh, come on. Now suppose that from this incredible statistic, they never promoted anyone, a reasonable person could infer that they didn't like black people, right? So what would be the difference between that evidence and the evidence of what the person had said?
Your Honor, there is an inference by not promoting anyone. There's still you have to draw an inference
of
that
course,
these people were qualified to be
inferences.
Promoted.
If a person says, I don't like black people, you still have to draw an inference that because he doesn't like them, he doesn't promote them.
Your Honor,
well, you can draw an inference from a statistical regularity.
But this court has said repeatedly that direct evidence, which
oh,
is...
Oh, nonsense.
I'm just going on
what
this court has said.
What we have said is the opposite. We say direct evidence, circumstantial, it doesn't matter. It's evidence. And you can have circumstantial evidence, which is more powerful than direct evidence, right? Eyewitness testimony, that's direct evidence. It is notoriously fallible. So I don't understand how you can just read out exclude statistical inference as a basis for making judgments about what is likely to have happened.
Your Honor, I don't think
now,
that we're suggesting
that. Now, you could say,
that.
Well, the statistical evidence in itself would not be sufficient, but certainly be probative.
Certainly not alone. And what has happened...
But, of course, you're taking a much more extreme position. You say it's completely irrelevant.
Your Honor, I believe...
You cannot think of a case where statistical evidence would be relevant in a discrimination case, unless it were, maybe disparate impact or a class action, something of that sort.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that, Your Honor. I think I can think of a case. I think I was trying to give you an example, which is if we have a relevant pool.
Grant me my example. Let me say, if you had a company that never promotes black people, never hires them, what have you, that one would think would certainly be relevant to assessing the reasons the company gave for not promoting this person, right? They'd say, oh, we didn't promote him because he wasn't any good. And then you'd say, well, that may be true, but on the other hand, look at your history, look at how you treat other people, and so on. That would be some evidence, wouldn't it, I would think.
It might be collateral evidence, yes, but that's still...
What's collateral? You have all these distinctions, direct, collateral. What difference does all that make? What work does do distinctions of that sort do?
Well, Your Honor, if you're throwing in, for example, officers or PhDs at the Fed, which there are lots of, how is that probative of whether Ms. Bailey and Ms. Smith, with respect to specific individual jobs that they're claiming they were discriminated against, how is information about the promotion rates of PhDs and officers relevant? It certainly, a statistical analysis might
be
relevant.
Well, suppose they had PhDs and all the white people had MAs.
That's obviously a different story, certainly.
That would be statistics,
yes,
right?
Yes, it would be, Your Honor.
Right, all right.
I think the issue here, Your Honor...
So you've abandoned your categorical rejection of statistics,
well,
which is very conspicuous in your brief, as well as in what you've said here.
If that's the way Your Honor has read it, I'm sorry that you've interpreted it that way. I don't think that was the intention. We have always said that in an individual pattern and practice case...
I don't understand individual pattern and practice.
Well, Your Honor,
I'm sorry. You're trapped with jargon. You're trapped in jargon.
I'm trapped, unfortunately, in what the standards this court has set
for the analysis of these cases.
That's
a weakness of judges. We're trapped in jargon, too. What does pattern and practice mean to you?
Pattern and practice is a look at a broader range of claims that may relate to the specific plaintiff, but go beyond the specific plaintiff to people that are similarly situated.
Well, how is that different from statistical evidence about the workforce as a whole?
It isn't. We prove pattern and practice through statistics. This court has said that. The bottom line here is that plaintiffs don't have relevant statistics to make a pattern and practice case.
Well, forget pattern and practice case. The question is whether their statistics are relevant to their case, right?
Not these statistics, Your Honor. That's the point that we're trying to make, is that these statistics that they are using are not relevant.
Is it because Skoog's methods were poor?
That also, but that's not the relevance argument, that's the reliability.
Suppose Skoog's methods had been flawless, no mistakes and so on. Would you still say his evidence was completely irrelevant?
To these individual claims, yes. Because it includes people with totally different job requirements, totally different backgrounds. It includes thousands of people that have absolutely no relevance to these two plaintiffs and their claims in this case.
Yes, but that gets back to my original question. What if of all 1,000 people in the Federal Reserve Bank, none of them were black, except Bailey and Smith? And suppose that in all the other Federal Reserve Banks in the country, 5% of the workforce is black. Would you say that statistical disparity was irrelevant?
That would be a hiring issue, and these plaintiffs have not claimed any hiring discrimination.
So you're saying it would be irrelevant?
For their claims in this case, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. Look, in these discrimination cases, you rarely have an admission. And if you don't have an admission, you have to draw inferences from all sorts of evidence that'll bear, usually indirectly, on the issues having to do with the qualifications of an individual and could also have to do with attitudes of the officials who do the hiring. And those attitudes would be inferred from a variety of facts, including the racial composition of the workforce.
Well, Your Honor, that's exactly the point. If we're going to draw inferences from statistics, then the statistics have to in some way have a relationship to the individual plaintiffs involved. I don't disagree that there are circumstances where inferences can be drawn from statistics. The bottom line here, Your Honor, and the position that the Federal Reserve Bank is propounding to this court, is that these are not the right statistics from which a reasonable inference of discrimination can be drawn with respect to the individual claims of Ms. Bailey and Ms. Smith. So, and the same thing is true with these charts, Your Honor. The charts are, and interestingly, plaintiffs have only included 4 of the 16 charts they tried to get admitted in the court below, which they've argued alternatively are either a lay study, statistical study, or they've argued are direct evidence, their term, Your Honor, in this case. The bottom line is that these charts suffer from the same flaw, Your Honor, which we would argue the statistical analysis as well as their individual prima facie case attempts have found, and that is that there's no evidence in this record, despite over 7 years of discovery, Your Honors, that shows that the people they have selected to draw comparisons to are in any way similarly situated. You look at these charts, and they cover 36 years in some cases. Were these people similarly situated at during the entire period of time for 36 years? They don't say. On their face, they cover their different job titles. We have nothing in this case that would suggest that these individuals are, in fact, similarly situated. The issue here, Your Honor, is that despite the 7 years of discovery, that plaintiffs elected to address this case if it were a class action long after the class was decertified. They obviously made a litigation tactic decision to not go into the individual claims of their plaintiffs. The result was there are huge gaps in the showing that this court has held repeatedly is required, which is that they are similarly situated. The prima facie case establishment is the burden of the plaintiffs. And I see, Your Honors, that my time has now run out, and so I would request that Your Honors affirm Judge Hibbler's decision on all counts. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Stillman. Anything further, Ms. Morgan?
Yes, Your Honor. I want to address 2 items. One is that these statistics have no relevance because they have no bearing on the particular individuals, Bailey and Smith. What is important is, first of all, these individuals analyzed by Skoog were at the same levels as Bailey and Smith. They were not manager levels. They were below manager levels. They were confined to individuals per the FRB's definition of who should be analyzed. Moreover, the individuals who are identified by Bailey and Smith in their individual treatment instances are included in this data that was analyzed by Smith, by Skoog. So contrary to Ms. Stillman's assertions, they are being looked at. There is a relevance greater than simply a general pool of the workforce. The Skoog looked at EEO stats, and I think that those statistics directly consider both the level of people's positions as well as the nature of the individuals whose promotions are being considered. They make this group of individuals that were in the data pool more relevant insofar as Bailey and Smith were concerned because they were considering them both at the same grades, at the same pays, over a specific time period. With respect to the charts, I want to just say they were confined to the supervision and regulation department that both of these individuals were in. They are summary charts which summarize detailed evidence concerning pay, promotions, and other relevant evidence that is elicited both in the disparate treatment sections as well as in the pattern and practice statistical analyses. If there are no further questions, we would request that this court reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment, remand to the district court for trial on the merits allow the use of the statistics in the proofs that Bailey and Smith proffer on the individual treatments and on the issue of pretext, as well as whether it's more probably true than not that their denial of promotion selections, pay disparities, were the product of race. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This case is taken under advisement. The court will take a brief recess before the second case this morning.